Good morning, AWS, and welcome to the third episode of AWS Morning Brief, gathering the news from AWS, contextualizing it through a lens of why it matters to the market, and then I make fun of it. I'm your host, cloud economist Corey Quinn. This show focuses on a longer list of AWS releases than I normally put in the last week in AWS newsletter, and it lets me go a bit deeper than I normally do. Strap in, but first, this episode is sponsored by AWS themselves, specifically their upcoming Reinforce conference in Boston. It is the premier and only cloud security conference that is named after an email subject line, and it'll be here next week on June 25th and 26th. In a truly horrifying turn of events, I'm going to be giving half of a track keynote, which is something that only now is dawning on AWS marketing. What could I say? What might I do? Slide review is going exactly like you expect it to. You should pop around. I'll have a discount code for you a little bit later in the show. You should attend if you care about cloud security, but you don't, because nobody does until it's way too late to care about cloud security. Be the change you want to see in the world. Come to Boston. Marvel at the fact that their street map looks like a microservices diagram. There are tracks for every skill level. There's a security jam. There's a CTF. So stick around for that discount code, come to Boston, and I'll see you there. Now, what happened last week in AWS? Well, it starts off with the most impactful announcement in years. The security blog features a interview-style profile of me. The title is definitely not an AWS security profile. Corey Quinn, a cloud economist who doesn't work here. The cloud economist section is embraced in offensive scare quotes. So, awesome. Appreciate that. But it was fun to have the chance to tell a little bit more about what I do, how I see the world, and then get promoted by AWS. I'm convinced that that must have been a contentious discussion, so thanks, whoever fought the good fight on that. Now, an awful lot of things that were announced last week came out of their public sector summit, which is fascinating because it mostly caters to government. This was in Washington, D.C. They have a series of public sector summits scattered around the world, but an awful lot of the announcements were services and features that we've already had for a long time that are now available in GovCloud. So, unlike almost every other AWS event, writing a keynote has got to be super easy for a public sector summit, because all you do is, in 2019, you just take the slides that were used back at reInvent 2014, and the services are just the same. I kid mostly, but it does take time to get things approved inside of a government environment, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's painful. And one announcement that came out was that their new partner network program is authority to operate on AWS. In order to run anything in a FedRAMP work environment, you need to have an ATO in place. Government contractors need that, and government customers need to make sure all of their vendors have that. AWS has now streamlined that process for its partners. There's benefits of economy of scale, and it also helps deliver somewhat more modern services to an industry that, let's face it, desperately needs it. They also saw Secrets Manager is now available in GovCloud, which is terrific. If you have secrets, and in the government, most assuredly you do, now you can store them inside of Secrets Manager. I think that that tends to speak to the ongoing evolutionary rise of services in public sector, getting away from the old model of cloud is just a place to run VMs, and into some higher level services. Somewhat related out of that summit, DynamoDB now gets on-demand and transactions available in GovCloud, which sounds awesome. This is relatively fast. This only came out in the past year, so they're starting to see things get deployed more rapidly inside of GovCloud. It's nice to see that start to happen. CodeBuild is also available in GovCloud, which is terrific. If you think that building software today in public sector, where you have to use GovCloud for some workloads, is painful and slow, you should see what their developer tools look like. Now, CodeBuild, let's face it, is not quite as nice as a lot of other service offerings out there. It's very no-frills, it feels enterprisey, but the ability to look at this and see something like this in a government environment is starting to be borderline transformative. That's important in those environments. Additionally, AWS DataSync is now available in GovCloud West, which is neat. The original GovCloud was US West. That's the one that this is rolling out to. They announced the second GovCloud, US East, And ever since then, they don't generally have to disambiguate which one they're talking about, because the burden has not been technical so much as it has been regulatory. Getting things passed and certified into these environments, that's a big deal. So the fact that they're still now starting to call things like this out tell me that in some cases, the regulation is moving faster than the technology. That's a bit of a new change. That's enough out of the GovCloud story. Aurora, with Postgres compatibility, now supports cluster cache management, which is probably a huge deal for some folks, but does add some interesting points of value there. My big concern with Aurora across the board is its lack of ability to vacuum storage. That's started to really smack into a few of my customers, and I'm going to continue to make a point of it every time I start to see announcements coming out of that until it gets fixed. I know it's hard, but hey, Amazon, we don't pay you large piles of money just to solve the easy problems. CloudWatch has launched dynamic labels on dashboards, which I thought meant something different, but I started digging into it, and unfortunately, no. It lets you have dynamic content that labels like a local minimum and local maximum on graphs, which various MRTG implementations and a bunch of other Viz tools supported back in 2008. So welcome to the party on that one, CloudWatch. I'd say that we've been waiting for you, but then when I look around at the sheer number of large monitoring companies whose entire business model is all about consuming you and then making you understandable to humans, and then I realize that no, we haven't been waiting for you at all. We've been trying to route around you as best we're possibly able to. Also in the world of region expansions, the Elastic File System is now available in Europe, specifically the Paris region. One thing that I find consistently irritating in these region announcements, other than the fact that there are a lot of them and almost none of them apply to most people, is that they're extremely inconsistent in how they reference various regions. This is AWS Europe paren Paris, close paren. Other times they would refer to it by its designation. Other times they'll wind up saying the Paris region. There's very little consistency in this, which tells me that internally they have their own nomenclature that they don't share externally. That's annoying. ElastiCache has launched reader endpoints for Redis, which is fascinating because they've had unified write endpoints for years now. That was a VIP that would float back and forth between whichever the active node was. A very similar thing caused a challenge for my environment many years ago, where we wound up spinning up a cluster. Instead of pointing to that VIP, we pointed to a specific cluster member. When it stopped being the master and started being the read replica, suddenly we found ourselves having an outage that manifested very strangely. Now there are VIPs for a reader endpoint and the writer endpoint, which is great. I still prefer my approach of one giant machine with a single IP and put all your reads and writes through that. There's nothing that could possibly go wrong with that particular architecture. That was a joke, in case you're debating doing something just that foolish. I said at the beginning of this show that we were sponsored by AWS and their Reinforce conference, and I said I'd be giving you a discount code. That time is now. That discount code is RFSAL19. That's Romeo Foxtrot, Sierra Alpha Lima 19er. Why should you use it? First, it gives you money off on your ticket. Secondly, because security is always going to be inherently an afterthought until it's too late and then you're getting yelled at because of a disastrous business situation. Right now, it's not too late. It's going to be a fun event. There are talks for all kinds of different user types, from business executives all the way on down to individual contributors writing code, and a whole bunch of specialty areas within the breadth and depth of cloud computing. There are going to be hundreds of sections from very smart people, and also me. Again, that code is RFSAL19. And if you use that code, ping me and let me know. I'm planning something fun for this event. So Amazon's FSx service, they have a version for Windows File Server and one for Lustre. Those are now both available in the Europe Frankfurt regions, which is great. But instead of one announcement, they turned that into two, so they could add two more to their number of feature and service enhancements over the past year model. This week, there were over 10 of them. I continue to get annoyed by the fact that they're trumpeting these and causing more noise than signal. Yes, these things are important to a subset of users, but those users aren't everyone. A region expansion I can get behind a little bit more is that Amazon MQ is now available in the Canada region. That is a stunning turn of events because now stereotypes are going to get turned on their head as Canadians will find AWS suddenly have to do an awful lot of apologizing to them because Amazon MQ is by far the worst of all the queues. I get people need to use it, they shouldn't, and I'm sorry for those people. Amazon Personalize was announced at reInvent last year, and now it is generally available. This is the recommendation engine that powers Amazon.com product recommendations, which is a bit of damning with faint praise. Hey, you just bought a TV. Maybe it's time for a new TV, and you'll continue to see those advertisements for weeks. Now, it makes for a cheap and easy joke, but I had the privilege of talking to a few people who work on systems like this. It turns out that in the course of a 10-year span, let's say that you buy a TV once. During the time right after you buy that TV, you have a statistically better than average chance of buying a second TV. Partially because you may be moving and like the first one so much you want to upgrade, the one that you bought may not work and now it's time to buy another, or you might now have gotten into a TV collection story. Regardless of what the reason behind it is, you are now statistically likelier to buy a TV. So having those things promoted to you does generate a benefit to the merchant. It's one of those counterintuitive things, but at stupendous scale, it starts to make sense. That's the sort of thing that Personalize does. And on the one hand, it's fascinating and more than a little creepy. And on the other, I'm mostly annoyed because it ruins some of my better jokes. Amazon QuickSight has launched multi-sheet dashboards, new visual types, and more. More does not include a substantial number of customers. And QuickSight's one of those things that if people who work in BI, they just don't touch. It has no real traction in the market, as best we can tell from outside any internal metrics they have around this. Meanwhile, the big player in this space is Tableau, and it was announced also last week that they're in the midst of an attempted acquisition by Salesforce for $15.7 billion. It's not that there's no need for a visualization service around business intelligence, it's that QuickSight just isn't that good at it. I've tried to use it a couple of times myself, and I needed to be guided by the hand through the entire process. Tableau's not that straightforward either, but it has enough critical mass where it is the default tool to wind up using. Amazon Recognition is now available in four additional AWS regions, including the one in Northern California, US West 1. You probably don't have much running there, and you shouldn't, because that region, as we're seeing now, years after Recognition was launched, only now is that service launching in US West 1. It's also 30 to 40% more expensive for an awful lot of things in that region. It also tends to be relatively smaller scale. People who have companies in the Bay Area love to put things there, but it's usually not the best answer. Unless you have extremely tight latency requirements, you're going to almost certainly want to put that inside of US West 2 in Oregon. Amazon MSK, which stands for Managed Streaming Kafka Service, is now integrated with CloudFormation and Terraform. That's the headline, and that's big. Terraform support gets the headline along with CloudFormation. On the one hand, that speaks to them being much more willing to embrace alternative models of working with their services, but I prefer a darker interpretation, namely that AWS is growing about as frustrated with CloudFormation's haphazard approach to service support as the rest of us have been for ages. The AWS Amplify console now also supports CloudFormation. And that's interesting, because I've been saying that Amplify is a glimpse of the future for a while. In that future, the infrastructure is more or less handled for you, and you're just writing front-end code. And yeah, I stand by that, I think, that we're going to continue to see Amplify being what things start to look like. And the CloudFormation's response to that is, oh yeah, well, we're going to fix that little red wagon by tarring it with our service from the past instead. It's great to have CloudFormation support, but in 2019, I'm not convinced that enough people who are using Amplify and are that target market care about CloudFormation. I only care about CloudFormation because I have to. CloudFormation also supports the AWS Client VPN. The Client VPN is stupendously expensive for individual users. This is designed for a use case where you have to manage and federate multiple folks rather than just one person trying to get into a remote environment. It is too expensive, and there's data transfer fees associated with that. It's not generally the best path forward for common use if you're a one or two person team. So if you're managing these things at scale, you sort of need to have an automation story around that. That could have been CloudFormation, but not until this past week. Instead, people who are using that at that scale have undoubtedly found other solutions. CloudFormation also supports additional capabilities in EC2, ECS, EFS, S3, and several more services. That's the headline. That's not me summing things up. That is a single headline. CloudFormation did some stuff, is more or less what this turns into. Great. Awesome. If you're into CloudFormation, you know where to find that stuff. If you're not into CloudFormation, you almost certainly lead a better lifestyle. CodeCommit, their Git-hosted service, now supports two additional merge strategies and merge conflict resolution. Unfortunately, my YOLO SLAM merge strategy remains unsupported for another round of feature releases. If you've ever had to work with me when we're both writing code, you know exactly what I'm talking about and would never work with me again. AWS Single Sign-On now makes it easy to access more business applications, including Asana and Jamf, J-A-M-F. The reason why that someone would name a company Jamf is mostly because it sounds hilarious into a microphone. I had to deal with that. So do you. Amazon Chime has achieved HIPAA eligibility. Awesome. Their service that it's like Slack, only without customers, can now be used to share medical information. I can only imagine the funny cat GIFs going around doctors' offices' internal chat systems. Wonderful. Fortunately, no one uses it. They now offer Cloud Endure migration at no additional charge. Cloud Endure was an AWS acquisition, and while I like that they're making it free, it certainly doesn't solve much of a problem. First, if you're migrating from on-premises data centers into AWS, the cost of that dwarfs any reasonable fee any service could charge you. Secondly, they're still calling it Cloud Endure, as in you're enduring a cloud migration. Is that the marketing angle they really want to go with? I mean, yes, it's absolutely accurate, but it's a bit on the nose. Strange choices. We're going to roll with it. The network load balancer is now available in the Osaka local region. Okay, what is the deal with the Osaka local region? Most account managers at AWS have never heard of it. You need special permission to turn it on in your AWS account, and I don't pretend to understand the nuances. A little help, please? They announced that the S3 SIG V2 deprecation period, which was supposed to be 10 days from last week, has now been extended and modified. We've hit a point where deprecation dates are being written by the boy who cried wolf. This is three sunset date pushbacks in the past 6 weeks, as I count them, which means that we are now into a point where I don't believe the first date that AWS ever gives me because they're going to push it back at least once. They're damaging their credibility with this, and it is growing increasingly frustrating to see. And lastly, there was a blog post on using Cost Explorer to analyze data transfer costs. Of course, the first step is to tag everything and then wait a while. Every time I see a post like this, I keep hoping they fixed a lot of that within the billing system. But no, they just wind up telling us the same things we already know, and we continue to have to go through the same limitations around services constantly. I keep getting hopeful, I read the blog post, and I'm disappointed anew. That is probably the best assessment I can give of the AWS billing system. I'm Corey Quinn. I care about that because I'm a cloud economist at the Duckbill Group, where we make your AWS bills smaller and less horrifying. You can read the newsletter at lastweekinaws.com, but you've just heard my deeper takes on AWS's service announcements for last week. Thanks again to AWS, first, for the Reinforce Conference for sponsoring this episode, as well as for giving me comic fodder. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Go forth and conquer.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.